Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good morning, all. It's 10 o'clock here in Dallas, Texas. I'm Kenny Hendricks.
And it's 8 a.m. here in Los Angeles, California, and I am Colette Williams. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening.
Today is our second podcast for the Change Matters show. Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening. We have actually changed the topic for today. We're all saddened and surprised at the passing of Muhammad Ali, the greatest, and so we thought we would dedicate this first half hour to talking about Muhammad Ali and the effect he had on a lot of people in our community and the world as a whole, and how he will be remembered.
Yes, and as Ken said, we are dedicating the first 30 minutes of today's show to the greatest, Muhammad Ali, and we will be talking about, discussing, and dialoguing about his dedication and his commitment to not only the boxing arena, but also to advocate for families, for communities, and for the rights of all people, for human rights. And he was a very strong, strong proponent of human rights, regardless to the color of his skin. That he was the greatest for all people, for all mankind. So it is our pleasure to dedicate this first half hour to the greatest, Muhammad Ali.
Okay. You know, I met Muhammad Ali, I can't remember what year it was, but I was walking down Wilshire Boulevard in L.A. and not sure what I was doing because nobody walks in L.A., but I was walking down Wilshire Boulevard and I passed a print shop and I looked in and there he was sitting at the counter. I thought, wow. Just in the middle of the day. This was probably 1986, 87, somewhere around there. And he had already been diagnosed with the Parkinson's disease. And I walked in and, you know, said, hello, champ, and went to shake his hand. As I could see, he was shaking. He was moving very slowly. And he picked up a piece of paper to sign an autograph for me. And I still have that somewhere. But I could tell, you know, I was very saddened by that, the fact that this giant of a man, this man that was bigger, almost bigger than life, had been sidelined by this very debilitating disease. It really struck me because I had watched him as a young man growing up, watching as many fights as we could, because back in those days there was no pay-per-view and things like that, so we used to have to go to the movie theaters to watch his fights. So we would do that. So, but he was very, again, like Colette said, he was a very strong proponent of human rights. And I do recall, when he refused to, go to Vietnam. And that was those are very turbulent times. Go ahead, Colette.
I do remember that as well. And last night I was working at the campaign headquarters for Philando Riddle, and the conversation ensued about Muhammad Ali, and a gentleman sitting across from me who happens to be a Caucasian man. And I would guess that he's my age. He might be a little older, but he could actually be much younger than I. However, he began talking about Muhammad Ali and he was in the airport, LAX, I believe, and he said that he had, he saw the champ, and he was in the center of course, a lot of people, and he said he didn't want to get involved in that, but he just went on. Well, he boarded his plane, went someplace else, came back, and lo and behold, the champ was at the airport again when he returned. So they were both at the curb waiting for their cars. And he was about, I don't know, two or three arms length from the champ. And he said, should I do this? So he walks over to him. He shakes his hand and he says, would it be okay for me to get an autograph? And he said, sure. And all he had was a few bills in his pocket. He took out a bill out of his pocket. He says he doesn't remember the denomination. But the champ signed on that bill. And he says that he has those kinds of things, that kind of memorabilia, all over. And he said he never forgot it. And he never forgot how pleasant and how considerate Muhammad Ali was, which also brings me to a point. When my husband and I had a commercial printing company near Beverly Hills, everybody went through there and everybody came through there. We did printing for God, everybody. And one of the things that we did was a great deal of printing for the United Negro College Fund. And they were always in some kind of collaboration with people like Sammy Davis Jr., Muhammad Ali, George Schlatter, just on and on and on. And one of the big galas that they produced was one for Muhammad Ali. And I believe that was prior to him getting sick. And I believe that was prior, in fact, I'm positive it was prior to him and making this, this disclosure that he has Parkinson's. And when he made that announcement, it was after the big gala, and that was a huge, huge event at the Shrine Auditorium. And everybody who was anybody, everybody in the know, that all the A-listers were there, and of course it was sparkle and dazzle and bling bling, but even at that time, he was very, very cordial and approachable and very mild-mannered and very willing to talk to people. And there was a huge after party, and as we went to the after party, he was still very, very cordial and approachable, and he didn't say, I'm too tired, leave me alone. He didn't do anything like that. And I remember riding back to L.A. on a flight with Mike Tyson, and the odd thing was that nobody wanted to talk to Mike Tyson. Nobody approached him. Nobody said anything. He sat in coach, I think two seats behind me. Nobody said anything to Mike Tyson, didn't say a word. And I'm sure I was coming from Dallas, and I had a layover in Arizona. Got to L.A., it was a different story. In L.A., people approached him, not a lot of people, but people approached him, they spoke to him, he went down the escalator, and they began to talk to him. Muhammad Ali, of course, is no comparison, no comparison at all. And it was only in L.A., that people approached Mike Tyson. But anywhere you go, everyone wanted to shake hands with the champ, with the greatest. And he definitely was. He was. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's kind of funny. I think people were afraid of getting beat up by Mike Tyson.
That's probably it.
No offense, Mike, if you're listening.
Yeah, if you're listening, Mike.
But Muhammad Ali, as I've watched some of the coverage in the past few days, much of the coverage did talk about how he was very approachable, never had a problem signing autographs, went to schoolyards, took pictures with young children. Again, very, very approachable. He was the people's champ. He really was the people's champ. And I want to say this, Piers Morgan, the gentleman, the English gentleman who used to be on CNN, apparently had a tweet where he said that Muhammad Ali has said worse things about white people than Trump has said about Muslims. And rightfully, he's taking a lot of heat for that. But, you know, the interesting thing is how some people can see someone like Muhammad Ali and not understand what he was all about and take it to that, in that direction, which is so wrong-headed, completely wrong-headed, you know, and I don't even know, need to go into why that's so wrong-headed, the difference in what Trump is doing and what Muhammad Ali has done. So it was just very disheartening to hear him say that. And there have been a couple of other tweets out there from people who haven't been very appreciative of the things that Muhammad Ali did. And that's kind of sad to see.
And the kind words, why now would someone of his caliber, Pierce Morgan, why would he now say that Muhammad Ali had unkind words? Well, we can take this back. Last year, 2 years, 10 years, 100 years. Remember when President Obama was giving his State of the Union address, there was a senator in the aisle who stood up and called him a liar during the address. So
that was
excuse me?
I'm sorry, Joe Wilson was his name. I just wanted to add that.
Yeah.
Senator Wilson. Mm-hmm.
So people have said all kinds of unkind things about this person or that person. They said all kinds of unkind things about Muhammad Ali, what he said, what he didn't say. When he went to Canada to avoid the draft, when he talked about aligning himself with or becoming a Muslim, people talked about him, and I do remember that back in the 60s. They talked about him, and he has turned out to be not the self-proclaimed king of boxing, but he will always be, by any man's standard, anyone's standard, the greatest. He was a humanitarian. No one has said anything about Michael Jackson. Well, yes, they have. I take that back. Michael Jackson, the self-proclaimed king of pop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Elvis Presley said horrible, degrading things about black people. What black man can't do anything but carry my bag. That was a statement made by Elvis Presley that is infamous and famous also at the same time, because that was a statement that he made publicly. A black man can't do anything but carry my bag. So let's not disparage, or let's not come up with those disparaging remarks or those remarks that are unkind. Now is not the time. Now is not the time. And I guess it's probably convenient because he's gone. But his family can certainly stand in for him. And he was the greatest. And you'll get no one except here someone like Pierce Morgan to say that he wasn't, to dispute that. He was. He was a humanitarian before he was anything else.
Ali had 61 fights. I wish I could say I'd seen most of them, but I did not. Again, back in those days, in the 60s and through the 70s, it was very hard unless you were where the fight was. You know, we had to go to the movie theaters and all the fights weren't shown. But the ones that I did see were phenomenal. And I recall, I believe it was his second fight with Leon Spinks, where it was fairly obvious that, and many of us thought that he let Spinks win, so that Spinks could get back on his feet financially. Spinks had had, you know, some major financial issues, and Ali gave him a second chance and actually let him win. And that was, everybody thought that, because everybody knew at that point, although I don't think at that time Ali was in his prime, but he still could have taken on Spinks. And we all watched that and thought, wow, what an incredible thing to do, you know. What kind of man does that? That is a man with a huge, huge heart, and a man that is ready to do big things for people. You know, and again, it's unfortunate that, you know, something like Parkinson's affected him for the last 3 decades.
Right.
You know, it's a debilitating disease, and it's very, no matter who it happens to, it's very sad. Yeah, but when you see someone, again, is larger than life as Ali was, it just gives you pause. Gives you definite pause.
Right.
You know.
Which we should do, as a matter of fact, before we end our show today. I think it would be appropriate that we end with a pause to honor remember a book fair that I went to at the Baldwin Hills Crenshaw Plaza, and his daughters were there. And they had written a book, and I don't recall the name of the book, but I do remember Layla Ali and another daughter. The two of them were there promoting their book. And they got a lot of signatures. They sold a lot of books. And at that time, they talked about their dad. And they talked about his influence, which also says, if you look at the path that Layla Ali has taken, he was a huge, huge part of their lives. And again, I don't know too many people that have disparaging comments, remarks, or negative things about to say about Muhammad Ali. He was not the A-lister who was out doing all kinds of things that we needn't discuss. But he was a man of distinction. He had a great deal of pride. He had a great deal of strength. He embodied strength. And that's important to the black community, or at least it should be. He embodied, he embraced strength. And he has to be remembered for all of those positive things that he brought to not only boxing, the sport of boxing, but to the community that he lived, where he lived. I believe where he is from, Louisville, Kentucky, the governor, I believe it was the governor, proclaimed, maybe it's today, his service is on Friday, maybe it's Friday, that's Muhammad Ali Day. They're going to take him down, a slow caravan down Muhammad Ali Boulevard. And it's to pay homage to the greatest. And I think it is appropriate for everybody in this country to pay honor to Muhammad Ali.
You know, Ali changed the sport of boxing, like Jimi Hendrix changed the way people played the guitar. The way Miles Davis changed jazz. Boxing was a very different sport before Muhammad Ali. If you look at the way boxers today box, there's always, most boxers, you can see the movement, the foot movement, the way they circle the ring, things like that. Those were all Ali's moves. No one was doing that before. Guys just stood there and went toe to toe and fought. And Ali started moving in the ring, moving around both directions, and things like rope-a-dope, you know, laying back and letting your opponent wear himself out. Those things were nowhere around. Those were groundbreaking, things to do in the ring. And, you know, just like comedians today, especially black comedians, talk about how they do their craft, and they were so influenced by Richard Pryor. It's the same sort of thing with boxing and Muhammad Ali. Everyone has something in their arsenal that was brought to the forefront by Muhammad Ali. You know, like the way Jackie Robinson changed baseball. You know, he was just a groundbreaking, a trailblazer, and not afraid to stand up for what he believed in. And, you know, most people are afraid to do that. You know, he said, okay, fine, send me to jail, although he didn't do the time, for being a conscientious objector. He did not agree with what was going on with the Vietnam War, and most people didn't agree with it. You know, I recall during that time, I was very afraid about being drafted. Luckily I had, but when I turned 18 in 1973, the draft was over. They had stopped the draft. And so I kind of, no pun intended, sort of dodged a bullet there. Didn't have to actually go in there and experience that. But again, it was very different times.
Right. Very different times. And in fact, those are the things back in the 60s. Those were the times when people were very, very committed. They were strong and very sincere about this issue with Black Power. And they were not afraid to say it. Muhammad Ali was not afraid. He had no fear. And by that, I mean, he walked across. He left the country because he said he would not go and fight for a war, fight a war that had nothing to do with him, that he thought was wrong, killing people. And in this country, we were trying to keep lives going. We were trying to make sure that we were not killing people all in vain, or we were not fighting a senseless war. And Muhammad Ali spoke for a lot. He was just one of the, he was the greatest. I can't say anything else. He was definitely the greatest. I don't know nearly as much about the sport of boxing as you do. As a matter of fact, I am not a boxer fan. I've seen too many people on stretchers as a result of that or in the hospital, and I've grown very, very sad because I've seen guys, as everybody, seen people lose their lives behind the sport. So I'm not nearly as committed to it or as interested in it as you. But Muhammad Ali, the person, not the boxer, is who I am very, very... I'm engaged with the person, not him, not the boxer. Go ahead.
And we're at the bottom of the hour. It's time for a break. We're going to take a quick break here, and we will be right back and change our subject, and we have some more things to talk about.
Right back.
Listening to Change Matters Solutions on Black Talk Radio, hosted by Kenny Hendricks and Colette Williams.
Hey, we are back with you. This is Change Matters Solutions. I'm Kenny Hendricks.
And I am Colette Williams, and we're back again to bring you more information, more news that you can use, and we're back.
This next half hour, we are going to talk about the primaries that are going on right now, the elections. We're in the midst of the primary, as everyone knows. Donald Trump has clinched the nomination on the Republican side, and while Hillary Clinton has, for all intents and purposes, clinched the nomination on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders continues to fight the system, as it were, saying that the pledged delegates are, although they were committed to Hillary ahead of time, he is saying that they might change their mind by the time the convention rolls around. And last night, as I was preparing for the show, I looked at some numbers and I wrote some things down. And even if all 572 superdelegates that Hillary Clinton has and Bernie only has 48, even if all 572 of them change their mind, that would still not give Bernie enough to clinch the nomination.
Right. And it says right here, it says here that they've spoken that the news channels, everyone has already said that she has clinched. She pinched it. So all those things can be disputed, but the proof is in the pudding, as I like to say. She's gone ahead and she's won it. So what are we waiting for now? Are we waiting for Bernie Sanders to say, I'm going to drop out? But the division and the taking a position that he should not get out until the very last drop gives someone else a greater edge. And why go in that direction? And I understand it's about votes, it's about doing, giving the people a choice and a better choice, if you will. But we really need to think about what he stands for and what she stands for. The experience that she brings to the table is far greater than the experience that he brings to the table. And I understand everybody has a choice. Yep, this is a free country. You can vote for who you want. He reacts to the declaration made that she is the nominee. His reaction, okay, but we're getting into an unnecessary fight between those two. That's my take on it. Ken, what do you think?
Well, I think we are faced, and people on both sides of the aisle are saying that this is probably the most consequential election of a generation. And I would agree with that, because we have two very imperfect candidates. And,
right.
And I would say to the people who the Democrats who say they won't vote for Hillary because she lies and she's dishonest and things like that, I would really, really caution you. And I would say, you know,
right.
Really do your homework and really make a decision about, do you want to vote? Do you want someone like Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump as your president? Donald Trump has proven time and time again that he does not have the temperament. He does not have the knowledge. He does not care about being president. And quite frankly, I've said for months that I really don't think he wants to be president. I think this was all a ruse to help his brand, and it basically snowballed. Right now, he is embroiled in the controversy about the judge, the Hispanic judge. Well,
right.
He's a Mexican. You know, how can he be impartial? And I was watching the news last night, and one of the people in Trump's campaign said he's just saying things that other people are thinking, but they won't say.
Well, maybe they won't say those things, the other people, because they are ignorant statements, and that's why they don't say it.
Right.
But when you look at that person, and he wants to call other people a liar, I don't think that Hillary Clinton is the perfect person. When you really stop and think about it, nobody's perfect on this planet, not one soul. But when you think about what that office means or what it should mean, he is nowhere near what that office means. I can't even close my eyes and get a visual on that person becoming president. Have you ever seen a first lady who takes nude photos? I think not. And to have somebody like that woman follow Michelle Obama, who is a perfect first lady, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. And not only that, that woman couldn't be first lady. They just have to use her name, because first lady is too much of a grand title for her. Why don't they talk about the fact that that man has filed bankruptcy four times? He's got four wives. He tells one lie after another. When you watch him on the news, when there are excerpts out of something that he's done, a rant that he has, he's never giving you fact. He's speaking like a third grader, not even a fourth grader. He talks like a third grader. Tip for tat, nanny, nanny, nanny. You say this, I say that. Somebody would really want that in the White House. I was with a colleague yesterday, and we were talking about his ability. He has no ability to run the country, not even to represent the presidency, not the presidency of this country. Can you imagine him sending out tweets from the White House? What else could he do? When other countries have said they would never work with him, he is not presidential material. He does not have the presidential commitment. He's all about himself. He's an egotistic, narcissistic maniac. So why in the world would people think that just because he is the founder of The Apprentice, he needs to be president? We made mistakes with Ronald Reagan. We made mistakes with Schwarzenegger. Why do we need to make another mistake with that moron?
There have been fact checks on Donald Trump, and one statistic I saw said that 91% of the things he says fall into either the lies, almost lies, misleading, or half-truths. The man is incapable of telling the truth. And speaking of his tweets, Colette, I think I told you yesterday, his campaign slogan should be, "I know you are, but what am I?" Because all he can do, if you looked at what he tweeted after Hillary Clinton completely eviscerated him in her speech the other day, all he could come back with is, "Look at Hillary. She's reading from a teleprompter." And oh, by the way, he misspelled teleprompter in the tweet. And okay. she doesn't even look presidential. That's all he had, you know.
What else can he say? Now, when he says people, she's reading from a teleprompter, I'd rather she read from a teleprompter than for somebody to come straight off the hat, from under the hat, to say the absolutely unconscionable thing that's come out of his mouth. I'd rather anybody read from a teleprompter. Maybe he doesn't read from a teleprompter because nobody would write the stuff that he says. So guess what? Who is worse, him or her?
And he actually has used a teleprompter on occasion, and he's terrible at it.
Right. And he's terrible at it. So she's reading from a teleprompter, and she should. I know someone who types for the teleprompter. So really,
everyone does.
There's something wrong with reading. Everybody who's in front of a camera reads from a teleprompter because people want to know what they should say and what they better say, because you say the wrong thing, it's going to come back on you. It's going to come back. And the very idea that he would mock her, she's reading from a teleprompter, nanny, really? Yes, she is. That's a good thing. He can't even read. Give me a break. There's nothing else that he can say about her. And anybody else that says, well, what about Benghazi? What about the email? You really care about the email? The email's really that, you're really, really that concerned about her email? Why does that have anything to do with the people of this country and how she or anyone else would run the country? Come on.
I had a friend that I worked with some years ago, another black gentleman, and he was not going to vote for Obama back in 2008 because Obama wasn't the guy. He said, Kenny, you know, I'd want to vote for him, but he's not the guy. And I said to him, you know what? When is the last time you voted for the guy? Presidential elections are 90% of the time, if not all the time, about the lesser of two evils. There's never the guy. You know, okay, if you didn't think Obama was a guy, did you think Reagan was the guy? When he ran, did you think George Bush was? Did you think Bill Clinton was? It's never the guy. Our politicians are not perfect. They have flaws. And politicians, you know, because of their job, the type of job they have, sometimes the truth is not always there. But with Donald Trump, the truth is pretty much never there. He says things like, and again, people need to start listening and challenging him. And I wish the press would challenge him. He says things like, many people are telling me this. And nobody says, okay, who? Tell me who. For example, on this case, about the judge, he says, many attorneys are telling me that this judge is treating me unfairly. But the press doesn't come back and say, okay, who are those attorneys? Give me the names of those attorneys who are telling you this. He has said that time and time again, just like he said about New Jersey. There were thousands of Muslims, and many people said thousands of Muslims were cheering during 9/11. Completely unsubstantiated, but people gave him a pass because nobody took him seriously. And look at what we're faced with right now.
Bernie Sanders,
now the Democratic Party is very fractured because Bernie is taking this thing too long. And I've watched Bernie. For a lot of people didn't know who Bernie was, but I watched a lot of politics and I knew who he was. Bernie's biggest problem is, one is his age. The other problem is that he calls himself, he's a self-proclaimed socialist. And there's an entire swath of middle America that are never going to vote for a socialist, no matter what. So his, you know, even though he gets good, some of the polls are saying he actually does better against Trump than Hillary does. You know, you have to be careful with these polls. You know, you have to be careful about how they ask the questions and things like that. There are people that are just not going to vote for a socialist. Yeah. You know, and, you know, furthermore, I don't think, you know, when he talks about, you know, free college and free all these other things, you know, some of those things are fine, but free does not cut it.
No, it doesn't. And not only that, that is not the world economy. That's not the economy for this country. And we know that big business, we know that big colleges, the Ivy League colleges, colleges and universities across the country will not sustain themselves simply by saying students don't have to pay, somebody else will. Somebody's going to have to pay. I don't care how you slice it, where you go, what you do. Absolutely, some of the costs are outrageous. But to say that a college education is going to be completely and totally free, I don't think so.
It's going to devalue the degrees.
It's going to devalue not only the degrees, but the idea of paying for your education. The idea, because people take more interest in it when it's something that they have to pay for. Mm-hmm. I do believe that tuition costs in some schools are outrageous. I do agree with that. But President Obama has also said that he wants to make junior colleges and community colleges free. I got that. I went to a community college when they were free. And then all of a sudden, we had to start paying for colleges. So I got that. But there has to be a balance. And you balance it by making sure that people can go to colleges and they don't have to mortgage their homes, their cars, their children for the rest of their lives. They don't have to do that. But when you say that you're going to make it free, where's the money going to come from if it's going to be totally free? Look at public education. Look at public education now that's free. Is it really what we want? Because this is a free education, because this is public education, you don't go in here and pay for anything? Don't let me get started on that, because I will have an anxiety attack. So let's be realistic. Let's be realistic about it. When you put the numbers on paper, when you put the numbers there, it doesn't add up. The numbers don't add up. So a free education straight across the board from preschool to 15, 16 years later, doesn't add up. It just does not add up. And yeah, I'd like free education, free universities and colleges. Absolutely. But it's unrealistic to think that that would happen. It's unrealistic. And the idea that we're taking things like a free education and that's a platform, what are we also saying? What are we saying about someone who can promise those things, but 9 times out of 10, that's not going to happen. There's going to be an excuse as to why not. Today is the primary here in California. And I've talked to people who are running out to the polls to go vote. Some of them are voting for Hillary. Also remember to vote for Felante Riddle. Felante is running for state senate in the 25th district. She will replace Carol Lou. She's also running on a platform that discusses, that talks about education and what she can do in realistic terms. She's not saying that I can help you get a free education, because it's not going to happen. And that's really not reality. That's not the reality of education, not at that level. So a free education, yeah, that's great. Until you get to the university level. Community college, okay. The university level, that's a horse of another color. That's something altogether very different. Go ahead.
And I understand the argument about, you know, young people graduating college and not being able to find a job and can't even pay back. That's part of the problem, is that they can't even pay for their education because they can't find jobs. But
right.
That's not the government's fault. You know,
right.
the,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's not the government's fault. Corporations, corporate America is sitting on like $3 trillion offshore that they won't bring back on shore. They continue to ship jobs overseas, and contrary to what Donald Trump says, he cannot just wave a magic wand and stop them from shipping jobs overseas. They can do something with tax breaks, stop the tax breaks and things like that, but he's not even talking about that. But nonetheless, the point is, you know, corporations have to start hiring people, and it's not the government. The government, again, cannot wave a magic wand and tell them to start hiring people. They just have to start doing it, and that gets into the whole, you know, income equality thing. You know, with CEO pay skyrocketing in the past 20 years and the average worker's pay being stagnant, you know, so that it's all part and parcel of that. So if you've got education that is costly, but people that come out of these institutions with good educations can get good paying jobs, they can pay that back and still have a life. It's all one big circle. It's all part, you know, it's all connected, you know.
Absolutely.
But for corporate America to basically abdicate any accountability in this is wrong. It's just completely wrong.
Right. And one of the other things is I have had opportunities to sit in with representatives from the U.S. Department of Education. And the first and second time we all sat in on this workshop, they were here to promote financial aid, the FAFSA. And they asked us to put together workshops in the community and at high school so that they could come in and they could talk to students, potential college students, about the FAFSA process and how to get through it. They gave us dates, times, and places and so forth. And some of the things that go on in colleges about FAFSA are myths. So until you get the information from the horse's mouth, we have to go in and change the way high schools engage students in the FAFSA process. One of the things that one of the gentlemen that we work with told us was that the U.S. Department of Education gets something like $150 billion a year. 150B. $150 billion to distribute and disseminate to students all over the country, all over the world. So when you think about $150 billion to spend on high school kids who want to go to college, really. But the thing that was most alarming was that they never spend even close to half. They don't even get close. And when the money is not used through FAFSA, it goes back to Congress. That's when you get the $250 ashtray. That's when you go ahead and you get six rolls of toilet paper for $10,000. Mm-hmm. That's when you go get the outrageous spending because there's money there and they can just do anything with it. I was going to say something rather vulgar, but I'll keep that. But $150 billion to spend on educating students from the U.S. Department of Education. Congress allots $150 billion. And you mean to tell me all that money can't be spent? I find that to be, that for me, that's crazy. How does that happen? And I sit here daily with kids telling me they can't go to school because they can't pay for it. They don't know how to get the money, where to get the money. They don't know how to access the money. They tried to go through FAFSA. But it's really not, it's an issue that folks just don't know about. And, Ken, which brings me to a point. This is the reason we're doing Change Matters. Because this kind of information will change the lives for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And as we stated in the very beginning, you and I came up with Change Matters because we want to see a change in the community. We want to see a change in the black community, in the black culture. We want to see families becoming families again. We want to see folks who are going to colleges and universities, they are being educated, and they're coming out with a not, it doesn't have to be a stellar education, but at least an education that will catapult them into the next level, not only to success, but they will be whole, and they can market themselves, and they will not only be educated, but they'll be well-rounded, because we all know that an A in a lot of places ain't an A, and it doesn't mean that you're a person of character. Look at the person who's running on the Republican ticket. I'm sure he has no character. That's something I am positive of. And the other thing that brings me, I don't listen to him. I absolutely refuse to listen to him. So when the commercial comes on and it's him or there's an excerpt, I walk away. I refuse to listen to that person with the hair. I absolutely refuse. And one of the things that I never hear him say purely on accident is what he can do with education. And if you remember, when our President Obama was running, education was one of the things that he talked about continuously.
Well, I'll tell you what he'll say. He'll say, I'll make education great. He'll say, we're going to fix education. I love people. He said about a month ago, I love the poorly educated. He always says, I love this. I love the Hispanics. I love the blacks. I'm going to do very well with the African Americans. I'm going to do very well with this. The man is completely full of it. And again, and we're coming up to the top of the hour, so we need to close this segment out. But in closing, I would say, you know, any blacks, minorities, or I guess if you're not a middle America Caucasian male, you know, and if you're looking at Donald Trump, thinking about voting him for him because you don't like Hillary Clinton, again, I would really, really implore you to look again and really understand the difference between the two. With Hillary Clinton, she's from a resume standpoint, there's no one that's been on the ticket that's more qualified. Okay, yes, she has some problems. She has some likability issues. The Benghazi thing. Yeah, everybody does. And the Benghazi things, if you want to blame her for Benghazi, you got to blame George Bush for 9/11. George Bush was warned about 9/11 several times before that happened, but they don't want to blame him for that. You know, Benghazi was an unfortunate thing that happened, and tragically, some Americans lost their lives. You know, they railroaded Susan Rice from being Secretary of State because she came out with the statements about that. So the Republicans have really used that to the hilt.
One of the things that I wanted to say about Hillary Clinton, she's still here in California, and she's going to be here in California campaigning until the cows come home. And I think that's a very good thing. As we were saying, and as we were talking to our listening audience, I would like to really bend the ear of people. When you really go to the polls, when you think about the differences between, especially on the Democratic side, when you think about the differences between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, what other woman has ever stood by and has gone through the kinds of personal issues? Forget about the issues in politics. Forget about the email and Benghazi. Forget about that. But this woman is running for president. She has gone through humiliation like none other. There isn't another woman on the planet that has gone through the kind of humiliation that woman has. And taken from the words of Maya Angelou, and still I rise. Because that woman, the respect and the dignity that woman carries is second to none. What woman could sit in the White House and go through the kinds of things that she went through with a husband like Bill Clinton? He was a great president, and he will always go down as a great president. He will always go down as an honorary black man. But he took that too seriously. Monica Lewinsky, all of the other women that came out of the closet while he was in the White House. How do you think that affected Hillary Clinton? It didn't take anything away from her. It didn't take anything away. It could have eaten her up. It could have eaten her alive. That woman has risen to the top. She rose to the top. She's on her way past the top. She's fighting for a position to run this country. She's got my vote. Without question, she has my vote.
And interestingly enough, I'm sorry. Interestingly enough.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Interestingly enough, the Republicans are trying to use that against her. Well, at least Donald Trump is. At least Donald Trump is. That it's her fault that her husband was a philanderer.
That's why she's running for president for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
So come on. Come on. Just really, the woman is, she is strong. She is committed. She is powerful. She's engaged. She doesn't stutter. She doesn't stammer. You can't ask her a question that she cannot answer. And not only that, she will tell you about her grandchildren. She will tell you how she loves to be with her grandchildren. She brings the human side to it. So when you think about who would be better in the White House, let's not even put that clown with the yellow hair. Let's take him off the table. But between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, who's more human? Of course, Bernie Sanders is, but who makes a better president? We need a woman in the White House. Men and women are different. She brings that to the table. She brings that to the Oval Office. Thus, she will bring it to the world, to the nation.
Given given a certain set of circumstances, I could vote for Bernie Sanders. But these are not those circumstances.
And again, Hillary weren't on the ticket,
I think his electability is in question. Again, contrary to what the polls say, I think it's going to be dangerous. He is 74. He looks more like, and I don't mean this to be disparaging, but he looks a lot older than he is. I've watched him on the trail, and you can tell he's tired. His voice starts cracking. He's getting, and it's hard being out there. I totally get that.
He comes out of his jacket. His shirt is tattered. Sometimes it's crooked. Sometimes it hangs out the back. He looks like he's tired. He looks like he's been on a grueling trip. He looks like he's been walking across the country.
Right, right.
And again, that's not to put him down. I don't want to be disparaging. Hillary Clinton comes out all the time with the same kind of suit on. And men do say, can she wear something a little different? But she comes out all the time.
Well, that's a sexist thing. And as a man, I'm going to tell you that's a sexist thing. Because men, you know, a man, they did a, what did they do? I think it was one of the news programs like MSNBC or something in there where they had one of the male anchors wear the same suit for some extended period. 2 weeks, a month, I can't recall what it was, and had a female anchor do the same thing. And people wrote in about the female anchor not changing her clothes, but not the male anchor. So we as a society need to figure out how to get past. You know, they talk about her pantsuit and this, things like that. You know, what is she supposed to wear, a miniskirt?
Right.
You know.
They won't be satisfied with that.
Yeah, they won't be satisfied with that. Yeah. So I don't have a problem with what she wears. I mean, you know, she, you know, anything else might look, well, let me put it also like this. When Sarah Palin was running for president, she was out there in a Michael Jackson red leather jacket, and that was nowhere near appropriate.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. And only those, and I don't want to say anything about the guy who was saying, can she wear a different kind of suit? But I do remember before they talked about her always wearing pantsuits. She must have 1,000 pantsuits in her closet. But who cares? Really cares? That's really not important. That is not important. Does she look presidential? Does she represent herself and the women of this country in a dignified manner, in a polished and refined manner? As she absolutely does. Yes, she does. And for me, simply for me, and I'm a fuddy-duddy. I'm all those other things. I'm not Well, we won't go there. But for me, she does. She does. And her ability, her capability to run this country has nothing to do with her pantsuit. Has absolutely nothing to do with her pantsuit. So mm-hmm. I'm not mad at her because of her pantsuit. Not at all. In fact, she gets triple stars as far as I'm concerned. She gets triple stars because she has been through it and she has come out smelling like a rose. And she's risen to the top. She's risen to, she's running for president again. And she's a grandmother. Okay. So she's got my vote. She's got my vote. And I really pray that our listening audience, that they'll take everything into consideration and stop with the Benghazi. When Colin Powell was Secretary of State, and I'll never forget watching him in the broadcast where they took that, I can't recall his name, but it was about the missiles in Iran. And they kept telling this guy, you're lying, you do have missiles of mass destruction. He kept saying it. And the man kept telling them, no, we don't. And as it turned out, they didn't have them. And that's when Colin Powell stepped down. That was during, of course, the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you, so people want to talk about the lies that other people tell. That person with the yellow hair wants to talk about the lies that other people tell. I don't know if George Bush ever said anything that was true or factual. Because he couldn't. He didn't know anything. He didn't know anything. He was a dropout. He didn't know anything. He was exactly like his mother said. I never thought Georgie would amount to anything.
Well, he was a puppet. You know, Dick Cheney was really pulling the strings and running everything, you know.
And look at the people who won't even align themselves or have anything to say. Newt Gingrich, who is scum of the earth, Newt Gingrich was on last night, and he said, he and four others said, of all of the things that this person with the yellow hair, he has made remarks about the judge that are just unconscionable.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's uninformed, but he's running for president, and there are people who are actually voting for him.
And like Sarah Palin, he doesn't want to be informed. He doesn't want to learn. Again, which is why I think he really doesn't want this job. You know, in order to be president, you have to learn. You have to want to do things. He doesn't want to do anything. And all he tells people, he told one pundit who's an expert at something. He says, yeah, I don't know that now, but day one, my second day, I'll know more than you know. He tells people, I know more than you'll ever know. He says everything's going to be great, and people buy into it hook, line, and sinker.
Everything's going to be great. Really?
Yeah.
But now, as you campaign, you probably don't even know what day it is.
Yeah, he
and
is.
Everything's going to be great. No, people, wake up, people. No, you cannot do that. He's not even puppet material because he thinks he's the greatest. What person campaigns and says, oh yeah, I got a lot of money. I got a lot of money. A lot of money. I got lots of money. Really?
And I think Hillary's doing the right thing. That last speech where she, again, just completely tore him apart. And she used his own words, you know, things like he said, I have a good brain. You know, he is just incapable of the job. So, but again, I think we are coming up to the top of the hour. We do have some additional shows coming up, and we are going to be having some guests as we move forward. In about our fifth show, we will have some guests, and we are going to be going live in the July time frame. Do we have a date on that July live date, Colette?
We certainly do. We will be live Tuesday, July 5th, we will be live. We will go live, and this will be a call-in show. Our first guest will be candidate for State Senate Felante Riddle from the 25th District in Los Angeles County. Today is a huge day for Felante. We're getting the vote out. We're asking people to get out there and vote for Felante Riddle. She's got an unofficial sample ballot with all of the people on the Democratic ticket who should win their seat. Felante is one of them. Hillary is one. So we've got a huge campaign out there. Today is a very, very important day here in California. It is a huge day. So Felante Riddle is our first guest, our live guest. We've got topics coming up. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of getting ahead. Ken always tells me to pull back, but I'm looking at shows down in December. But we've got some exciting things coming up, especially with our live shows. We will be on the air, coming to you live. We want you to call in. We want you to join us. We want you to talk back, if you will. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know what your solutions are, because we are talking about change and we are talking about solutions. And it's not just our solutions. It's not just what we think the changes should be or need to be. We want to hear from people who are out there listening. We want to know what your thoughts are. We want to know how, when, and where you see change and what's necessary in your community. We can't be everywhere. We can't do everything, and we can't be all things. So join us, listen to us, talk back, and let's get that dialogue going. Let's keep it moving, and let's come up with solutions, and let's come up with outcomes. We know you've got them, so join us.
Thank you very much. I'm Kenny Hendricks.
And I am Colette Whitman coming to you.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
Have a great day.